Mr. and Mrs. Brown first met Paddington on a railway platform. In fact, that was how he came to have such an unusual name for a bear, for Paddington was the name of the station. The Browns were there to meet their daughter Judy, who was coming home from school for the holidays. It was a warm summer day, and the station was crowded with people on their way to the seaside. Trains were whistling, taxis hooting, porters rushing about shouting at one another, and altogether there was so much noise that Mr. Brown, who saw him first, had to tell his wife several times before she understood. A bear? On Paddington Station? Mrs. Brown looked at her husband in amazement. Oh, don't be silly, Henry, there can't be. Mr. Brown adjusted his glasses. But there is, he insisted. I distinctly saw it. Over there, behind those mailbags. It was wearing a funny kind of hat.
Paddington Bear first appeared on the 13th of October 1958 and was subsequently featured in more than 20 books written by Michael Bond. The polite immigrant bear from darkest Peru, with his old hat, battered suitcase, duffel coat and love of marmalade sandwiches, has become a classic character from English children's literature. Michael Bond joined me in the Talking Book Studios, and our interview actually started when I asked him for a few random lines to check his microphone level. Usually when you do this, for some reason, most interviewees will tell you what they had for breakfast. Guess what the creator of Paddington Bear had that morning. Could I have a little line for level, please?
Yes, indeed. This morning I had my usual breakfast of toast and marmalade, which I have to have because that's Paddington's favourite thing. If I didn't have toast and marmalade, I don't know what my world would look like. Actually, it's very good for you, marmalade, I think. I wish I'd, in the beginning, I wrote the first book very quickly, and because I ate marmalade, I put marmalade in. I often wish I'd pick something more exotic, like truffles or, you know, because people used to send me jars of marmalade through the post at one time, and badly wrapped most of the time. So the postman would knock on the door and say, there's a parcel for you down at the office, Gov, and you get down there to pick it up and there'd be bits of glass sticking out of it. And, and I did mention it once or twice and it's eased off now. So
marmalade was your favourite before it was Paddington's then?
Paddington finds it very useful because he likes the chunks. He likes chunky marmalade. I remember doing an interview once with a librarian and what about the chunks? What does a small child with? I said, what does Paddington do with the chunks? And I said, he finds it very useful as bookmarks. And I saw this librarian go quite tense. Thought of all her books having chunks of marmalade in them.
Why, Henry, she exclaimed. I believe you were right. After all, it is a bear. She peered at it more closely. It seemed a very unusual kind of bear. It was brown in colour, rather dirty brown, and it was wearing a most odd-looking hat with a wide brim, just as Mr. Brown had said. And from beneath the brim, two large, round eyes stared back at her. Seeing that something was expected of it, the bear stood up and politely raised its hat, revealing two black ears. Good afternoon, it said in a small, clear voice. Good afternoon, replied Mr. Brown doubtfully. There was a moment of silence. The bear looked at them inquiringly. Can I help you? Mr. Brown looked rather embarrassed. No. As a matter of fact, we were rather wondering if we could help you.
Now, we know about the fictional origin of Paddington Bear, but where did he come from in reality?
Well, I was working as a television cameraman at the time, but I wrote my first short story when I was in the army in Egypt, and I'd always wanted to be a writer, and I carried on when I came out into Civvy Street again. And I was sitting one day with a blank sheet of paper and a typewriter in my small flat in this near Paddington, and I'd bought a small bear. It sounds like a sob story, but it's not actually, it's the truth. I went out shopping to get a kind of stocking filler for my wife, and I found myself in Oxford Street and it started to snow. And I went into Selfridges to get some shelter, and I found myself in a toy department. There were very few other people in there because of the weather, and I came across a small bear who'd been sitting by itself on a shelf, and I... It sounds rather silly at the time, but I felt rather sorry for it. I think it's something about bears. You want to protect them, and I think there are many qualities that other creatures don't have. You feel with a bear you can tell it your secrets, and they're not going to, as far as children go, you can tell it their secrets, and you keep it safe. And anyway, I sort of hovered around, and on the spur of the moment, I bought this bear and... took it back to my wife, and because we live near Paddington, it seemed a nice, important name for it. And I think all bears, they've got this strange quality, you find yourself talking to them. And this one is quite small, about 6 inches big, I suppose, not like the real Paddington, you know. It used to sit on the mantelpiece, and I had a day off from working in television at the time, and I had this blank sheet of paper and a typewriter, and there's the awful knowledge that nobody's going to put any words on it unless you do. And I looked around at this bear, and I wondered what would happen to a real bear had it been found on Paddington Station. And I wrote the first words of what became a book. I mean, I had no intention of Certainly no intention of writing a book. It was just a doodle. I had no intention of writing a children's book. But it caught my fancy, and I actually wrote the first book very quickly because I gave it all sorts of things that I was involved in my life. I mean, I used to wear a duffel coat myself, a government surplus duffel coat. So I thought the bear ought to wear a duffel coat, and I had an old government surplus hat, a bush hat, which I also wore, because this was 1956, but still we hadn't recovered from the war really, so people did wear duffel coats and government surplus things, and Mr. and Mrs. Brown, who found him on the station, were really my parents. And my mother would certainly have taken him. And my father was a civil servant, and he'd be worrying about whether they were breaking any kind of law or not. But it was my mother who actually ruled the house, and she was somebody who made up her mind straight away on the spur of the moment. There was no changing it. And she always saw things in terms of black and white. I mean, if it was raining, it was raining cats and dogs. And if the sun was out, it was blazing down. And I had memories of wartime when I was small, and I was living in Reading, and trains used to ride down just at the start of war from London carrying refugees. Small children with all their belongings in a suitcase, and they had a label around their neck saying that their name and address and so on, in case they got lost. And I thought, well, Paddington ought to have a label around his neck saying, please look after this bear, and thank you after it, which is most important.
But what are you going to do now? Said Mr. Brown. You can't just sit on Paddington Station waiting for something to happen. Oh, I shall be all right, I expect. The bear bent down to do up its case again. As he did so, Mrs. Brown caught a glimpse of the writing on the label. It said simply, please look after this bear. Thank you. She turned appealingly to her husband. Oh, Henry, what shall we do? We can't just leave him here.
I thought... that it would be nice if they had some two children, one male, one boy and one girl. And I was brought up as a child, my best friend, they had what was known as a housekeeper. In actual fact, there were a lot of middle-class or lower-middle-class people who had a member of the family who probably lost their husband or their boyfriend during the war, and so they were taken in by the family. So Mrs. Bird, who was the Baron's housekeeper, is not as a lot of people think, a Cockney, genuine Cockney housekeeper. She is a member of the family, and she kind of rules the family. She's quite strict, and at that point, I thought, although it was very nice of the Baron's, Mr. and Mrs. Baron to take this bear in, they didn't necessarily totally understand what it was like to be a refugee. And it so happened, in the BBC, I'd been working for an overseas department for a long time, monitoring service, which was mostly staffed by refugees, and they all had totally different stories to tell. And I thought, Paddington needs somebody who knows what it's like to be a refugee. So there's Mr. Gruber, who's got an antique shop, because I live near the Portobello Road at the time. I knew it very well. So all the surrounding country, which is in the books, is that particular area of London. And then I thought, well, everybody's been very nice up to now, and it needs somebody who's not quite so nice. So the Baron's next door neighbour, Mr. Curry. Mr. Curry is very useful because he's such an awful man and is always trying to get something for nothing. that you can get away with it, the fact that he deserves what he gets. So when Paddington wins over him, he deserves it.
Mrs. Brown bent down. "You're a very small bear," she said. The bear puffed out its chest. "I am a very rare sort of bear," he replied importantly. "There aren't many of us left where I come from." "And where is that?" asked Mrs. Brown. The bear looked round carefully before replying. "From darkest Peru."
When I wrote the book, which I say I did very quickly, I did put in the original text that he came from darkest Africa, and I had an agent by then, and I sent it to him, and he said straight away, "Well, I like the book very much, but P.S. there aren't any bears in Africa." So I went to the library and studied it up a bit, and I was looking for some part of the world where English people never went, somewhere fairly remote. And so I discovered there are bears in Peru. And in those days, Peru was really not somewhere people ever went on holiday. And the interesting thing about it is that over the period of time, I'm always getting letters from people or schools saying that they were going to Peru because they wanted to go on the trail to see where Paddington was brought up and so on. It's a very popular place to go to these days. But at the time, it seemed very remote and ideal. I was supposed to go out to Peru at one point. Stephen Fry had read some of the books. And Stephen Fry is a marvellous reader for the Paddington books, and he's rather bear-like himself. But he went out on an expedition to see where Paddington was actually brought up. And so I was supposed to go with him. Unfortunately, one had to have a lot of inoculations and so on before going in those days. And one of them disagreed with me, and I wasn't allowed to travel, so I didn't go on the expedition, which wasn't quite such a bad thing, because the very first meal they had, they had some shellfish in Lima, and everybody got almost hospitalised, so I escaped that.
"Well, that's settled then," said Mrs. Brown, before her husband could change his mind. "And you can have marmalade for breakfast every morning, and..." She tried hard to think of something else that bears might like. "Every morning?" The bear looked as if it could hardly believe its ears. "I only had it on special occasions at home. Marmalade's very expensive in darkest Peru." "Then you shall have it every morning, starting tomorrow," continued Mrs. Brown. "And honey on Sundays."
I think... I mean, when I wrote the first book, I always write to please myself, actually. Although they are obviously children's books because the hero is a bear, so they're not for any particular age group. And I there's a lot in there for adults as well, because I think reading should be a shared experience. I know when my daughter was small, if I was reading to her in bed and I wasn't enjoying it, she'd say, "Daddy, you're not really enjoying this, are you?" And I would say, "Well, not really." And she'd say, "Well, let's read something else." So I try to make the books enjoyable to all ages. I think I was lucky enough to be brought up in a house where books were part of the furniture, and I never went to bed without a story. Mm. And it was just natural to pick up a book and read it. It was to turn on the tap, you know, which is, I think, a great start in life. And I think that's where the reading habit has to start, really, at home. It's no good saying, when they go to school, let's hope they're taught to read properly when they get to school, because there's so many other distractions, particularly in this day and age with all the... I mean, small children these days have their own mobile telephones, and if they're lucky, they have a mini computer or something.
Mm.
So I think starting off reading at home, reading, having a bedside story is really... a wonderful thing, a nice warm thing, and it's a sort of binding, it's something which will last you for the rest of your life.
Mm.
I feel sorry for people who don't have that behind them.
Yeah, because unlike a lot of books that we feature on the show, the Paddington books are really designed to be read out loud.
Yes, I think if you have a good reader, as I say, Stephen Fry is a good reader of the Paddington books. It does bring them to life.
Even the best narrator, though, isn't as good as your mum or your dad, you know.
Oh no, absolutely no. I'm certainly not one of the best readers in the world. I like a lot of people, when I hear my voice on the radio, I think, oh dear. And if you get the voices right, it's very special.
There are many Paddington books available from RNIB. And Michael Bond, thanks so much for joining me on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, thank you very much.